So again, this should be Lilu Nishmas. The refuah, Haguf for Menachem Mendel Ben Reisel. Also, my mother had surgery this week. Her name is Hannah Miriam Vaschana. So she should have refuah Shleima. And Chana is a very, very special name for me because actually I was named after Chana. Had I been a girl, this year would be about me, probably. But also, I would have been named Chana. But since I was a boy, I was named Elchanan, which is which was good for me because people laughed at me for enough things as a kid to be called Chana. Oh, Chana Leah, it's so nice to see you today. That would have been embarrassing. So it should be a zchus for refuah shleima for my mother. And frankly, b'soch shar chole Yisrael, everybody who doesn't need some type of refuah. Last Monday, if you remember, there was a very great shiur that was announced in this yeshiva. First of all, I want to welcome all the graduates back because I happen to love all of you and I'm so happy to see you and you made my life. I usually show that when I jump up and down as I'm hugging you. But so thank you for coming home, and it shows your heart is in the right place, I'm told, although it hasn't yet been confirmed. Miami Beach is still there, right? And there's still sun, and there's still a pool, and there are other things, and yet you came here. So that says about a million wonderful things about you. Instead of sitting in the sun and getting a tan and, you know, whatever else people do there, you're going to be sitting in a closed room. You know, hopefully it will be cold outside. Hopefully it's going to start snowing soon. And you did it because you love Hashem. So if you love Hashem, I love you. Okay. Last Monday, there was a shiur that was called at 6 o'clock. And it was really, really exciting. And a lot of people came. And one person didn't come. And that person was me. And the reason I didn't come, now, normally, so what does it matter whether or not I come? Let the show must go on. What did they say after the assassination of the 11 athletes in Munich in Germany? In, when was it? 1972, you guys remember. Pretty good. So, my chavrusa. So, Usher. So, they said the games must go on. The games are holy. They must go on. Okay, so a few more Jews were killed. 11, 6 million. Yeah, let them go. But the games must go on. So, the games went on. But the shiur should have gone on without me, but the problem was I was the one who was supposed to give it. Now, I only found out about it much, much later. I didn't know. So therefore, I apologize to everybody who came and nothing happened. I just didn't know. I didn't know. There was actually a wedding of a graduate of the yeshiva. And I was at his wedding. That's where I was. I didn't know. Had I known, I probably would have planned it out that I would have also been at the wedding and also been here. But I didn't know. So I apologize. And I thought that it was a great lesson to introduce our class today for two reasons. Number one, just to teach you to be melamed tzchus, because, you know, it's a chutzpah. It's a chutzpah that somebody's supposed to be here and they're not here. How can they not come? So most of the time in life, people come to conclusions, they reach hasty conclusions when their facts are just off, and that's when quarrels usually begin between people, because they're making assumptions which aren't necessarily true. Often we ascribe negative intentions to people. This is what you meant, this is what you thought, this is why you did it. And we don't know the whole story. It says, "Altadun es chavercha shetagia lemekomo." Don't judge your friend until you're in his place. When will you be in your friend's place? When? Never. Never. Only if you were in his mother's womb with him for 9 months, okay? And then you had the exact same upbringing as him and the exact same tests and difficulties and challenges and personality, okay? And then you can judge somebody, so you really can't ever judge anybody. So that's why it says that if you judge somebody else favorably, God will judge you favorably. So the Holy Rebbe Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz through Rashi Lemir says, what do you mean God will judge you favorably? Judging somebody favorably is, I'm assuming that the reason was, and you make a favorable reason. The reason he didn't come is because he didn't know about the shir. That would be assuming favorably. Or it could also be that the reason he didn't come is because he's just obnoxious and he doesn't care about anybody but himself and he just didn't feel like coming. So you judge me favorably. So if you judge somebody else, that's called judging. What do you mean God will judge you favorably? God knows the facts. So how can God judge favorably? So Rav Chaim says that no. That whenever anybody does anything, there are always two ways of looking at it. You can look at it mitzad ha-chesed, and you can look at it mitzad ha-din. So, if somebody comes late, you can look at it mitzad ha-chesed, that they came late, there was a million things that came up, they were stuck in traffic. You can look at it mitzad ha-din. If they really, really want to be here on time, they would have been here on time. We all know that I personally am chronically, and I would almost say diseasedly late. Like, Baruch Hashem, that's the way, I think I was born late, and I've been late ever since. Yeah? I've never missed a flight in my life. except for one that I I was in Yeshiva HaKotel. So one of the Israelis goes, "Can I see your ticket?" I guess he never saw an airplane ticket before. So I showed it to him because I was flying that night. So he said, "Doesn't it say 10:25 a.m.?" And I thought my flight was 10:25 p.m. So it was really a.m. So that was the only flight I ever missed. But besides that, in my life, whenever I have a flight, I always make sure I'm there on time. I can't say that I, you know, get there in plenty of time, but I haven't missed one yet, and I've flown a few thousand times. Why? Because I'm not sure what happens when you miss your flight, and don't tell me, but I'm afraid that I just lose my ticket and my $500 and everything, and then I have to pay all over again. That's what I have in my mind, and I want to keep that in my mind so I keep making my flights. So I said, is it worth it for me to lose $500? The obvious answer is, no, it's not. So I see that when I really want to get somewhere, I get there. So you can always say, if he really wanted to be here on time, he would have been here on time. So that's Sanhedrin. So you can look at any action anybody does in life, you can look at it favorably. Somebody says something not nice to you, you can say that was obnoxious. Or you can say they must be having a rough day. You can say their father probably didn't hug his child enough when he was a baby. You can always look at it, sometimes they're both right, they're both correct. But if you want to have a positive relationship with somebody, you just always are mata klape chesed. I know one person in the world who does this. Maybe there are more. But every fault a person has, they always are able to turn it into something complimentary. You know, there was once a guy, they called him a halbe ilui, a half a genius. Why a half a genius? So very often if you're a genius, there are two parts to being a genius. One of it is that you're really smart, and the other one is that you're a little crazy also. You got these really crazy, they're very eccentric, and you have this craziness. So somebody, they said about him, he's a half a genius, meaning he's only the smart part, but he's not crazy at all. He's not eccentric. So this person I know, whenever somebody has a negative quality, what they always do is, they always say, you know, you're very, let's say a person's very moody. You're very moody because you're so deep. Because you think about things so much, and you see all different sides of life, so it's hard for you to deal with. And they won't give it a bad name. Instead of calling a person moody, they'll say a person sometimes has to overcome bouts with sadness. A person has a challenge to overcome his bouts with sadness. That's a lot more positive than saying that somebody is moody. You can say that somebody is always late, or you can say that somebody is always trying to get there on time. Right? Because he's always struggling with getting there on time. Every quality, you can say somebody's a lech, he's a clown. And you can say somebody's really funny and he puts smiles on people's faces. I remember once I knew a guy who wasn't, probably he smiled, but probably only on Purim. So he once said something to me. I once, you know, was myself. And he said to me, "Today isn't Purim. Today's in Purim. So what are you acting like that for?" So in other words, he took a quality of mine and he made it something very negative. Like, "You're a clown. What are you doing? It's not Purim today." Whereas other people would say, "Oh, you know, it's so nice, you make me feel so good when I'm around you, put a smile on my face." So every quality, you can look at it in the positive way, look at it in the negative way. So let's say you have a wife, and your wife is, you know, like the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim says about Lashon Hara. It says, you're not allowed to say about somebody that he always has food on the stove. Why? Because always has food on the stove can mean that they're fat, they love to eat, they're constantly eating. Or it can mean they're great machnis orchim. So if there are less than three people there, you're not allowed to say that, because then people might take it negatively. So if there are more people there, you're allowed to say that. So let's say you have a woman who loves to be in the kitchen. She loves food, she loves dealing with food. So you can say, "Oh, she's in love with food," which isn't such a compliment. Or you can say, she's a real balabusta, they say today. She's a real great hostess. She loves, you know, serving people food and giving them pleasure. That's something positive. So everything can be looked at positively and negatively. And fortunately, when I came back and I started apologizing to people, people were actually quite done me lekav schus. People said, "Yeah, I assumed that you didn't know if you didn't come." And of course, that was the truth. So it's kedai always in life to judge favorably. Now, when I didn't come, it was interesting. I thought to myself that that's a real lack of respect. When somebody comes to meet you, right? In America, they call it to diss somebody. If you have a date and you don't come, so you dissed her. What does this mean? This is short for something. What's it short for?
Disrespect.
Disrespect. That's what this means, to disrespect. So today what I want to talk about is respect. Respect is the most basic building block of every relationship, and particularly marriage. But we're going to see more than that. There's a sefer called the Balam Or Maseches Brachos, This is the beginning of the Hakdama, his preface to the Baal HaMor, Reb Zrachia Levi. I have a friend who named the son Zrachia. He named the son Zrachia in memory of the Baal HaMor. How many Zrachias do you know named in the memory of the Baal HaMor? He says as follows. B'makomos Rabin Bakasuk, this is in his preface to Maseches Brachos. In many places in the Pasuk, Nikris HaNefesh HaChaya Kavod. Your soul is called Anu. So we have a name for a soul. The soul, the human soul, the neshama. The neshama is called Anu. You ever know that? Kidichtiv. And he brings a proof from Pasuk. Samach libi v'yagel kavodi. My heart is glad and my kavod rejoices. What's kavod? My neshama. Or another pasuk. Ura kavodi. Let my neshama awaken. Or another pasuk. Leman yizamercha kavod. What's the man yizamercha kavod? What's the kavod? My neshama. My neshama is going to sing to you. Leman yizamercha kavod. Continues the Baal HaMor. Ki habore otzla ala adam mikise kavodo. Uba nasan olav mehodo. Where does our soul come from? We know that before we're born, our soul is next to God's kisei hakavod. What's the kisei hakavod called in English? Throne of glory, or better, honor. Honor, kavod, respect. Kisei hakavod. Our neshama comes from this place called respect. Kavod. V'hu atzem anichsav el yesodo. In this kavod, yearns to go back to its source. Our body doesn't realize that. Our body's trying to figure out, I'm going to finish by 7, so we'll get to dinner on time. But our soul is interested in dinner, our soul is interested in kavod. K'mo choshek asher nimtzav l'dodo, oz yigalei l'sodo, b'dosho atzedek ba'odo. It gets really poetic here. U'v'vaksho hanocha b'chol l'bobo b'chol ma'odo, u'v'chopso emes kasher tasig yado. So your soul wants to go to its source, like a choshek nichsaf ledoda, like somebody who desires its beloved, and then azigale lof sodo, then you'll get the secret. Bidosho hatzedek ba'odo, if you try to search for the right, what's right, and you obivacho anachem b'chol avol b'chol ma'odo, and if you try to search for what's correct with all your heart and all your being, ubechipso emes kasher tasig yado, and we search for truth as much as you possibly can. And then he says, "Kidusivim tivakshena kikesiv v'chamatmonim tichapsena as tavin yirtz Hashem v'daslokim tivdimsa." If you search for it like money, like people run after money, then you'll know fear of God. Okay, and then he goes on talking about how the soul yearns for its source and to go back. And I invite you all to read this hakdama. It's printed at the beginning of Maseches Brachos. But what I basically wanted to bring out is that the soul is called kavod. That's the soul. It comes from the kisei hakavod. And it's called kavod. So that means that if you ask somebody for a definition, what is a human being? What is a human being's greatest need? Answer, kavod. What's the proof? So what do psychologists say? Some people anyway. The theory is that man is a pleasure seeker. Man wants pleasure. And everything we do in life is to get pleasure. We sleep for pleasure. We eat for pleasure. We earn money to get pleasure. We even daven for pleasure. We daven, of course we daven for pleasure. We even go to the dentist for pleasure. What's the pleasure of going to the dentist? Answer is, so afterwards we'll be able to eat. Afterwards our teeth won't hurt us. Everything we do is for pleasure. You're going to college, so the pleasure, you'll get the degree and then you'll be able to make money. Or you'll make your parents happy. Or you'll feel good when you get good grades. Or you'll learn something. Whatever it might be, ultimately what man is after is pleasure. That might or might not be correct. Let's see. You're invited to the King David for a Shabbos lunch. And you're really excited to go. And everybody's there at the table. And everybody there has a place mark. What is those things called? Place card, thank you. And everyone has a place card, and your card says, table under table 13. Say, what? And you get to table 13, and all the seats are taken. You say, I think I'm sitting here, and then the hostess looks at it and goes, no, you're under table 13. What do you mean? She says, well, human beings eat at the table, and dogs eat under the table. So, you know, like the old, once had a country club. You know, no Jews or dogs. You know what I mean? So the dogs eat under the table, and the human beings, everyone else eats. So, you know, we're not really sure what you are. So sometimes you're like this, sometimes like that. So you're going to be eating under. So they put you up, you go under the table, and there they have a little dog house. Okay? And then they have a plate of food over there, on the not on the King David china. I don't know if King David was ever in China. But you, with a little doggy thing, a doggy bowl. And in the doggy bowl, they have all the delights of the King David. They have the chulent, and they have the roast beef, and whatever you like, with the mustard, without the mustard, with the ketchup, without the ketchup. All the delights. You have a few bottles there of soda, of whatever treats you like, of if you're a Rav Yochasid, some clay, some olive oil, whatever you like to eat. Okay, so what happens? You start to eat. You enjoying it? You even start to eat? No. But it's pleasurable. The food is good. Your taste buds enjoy the food when you're licking. By the way, there's no silverware. You're eating. You're sticking your face in the plate. There's no silverware. You're not going to eat. Why not? Why not? Because it's a complete and total bizayon. They're disgracing you. They're treating you like a dog. What about pleasure? The answer is, man's greatest need is not for pleasure. Man's greatest need is for dignity. That's what a human being. Now, it happens to be that just because you need dignity doesn't mean you don't want pleasure. Most of our thoughts are focused on the pleasure, not on the dignity. But the most basic human need is dignity. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, I wouldn't say this, if I quote the Holy Rebbe, then I'm quoting the Holy Rebbe, that if a person was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they're worthless, they would die on the spot. Couldn't take it. They couldn't. I'm zero. They would die. They would die. We all know we're not. And by the way, that's where self-esteem. When people have problems with their self-esteem, why do you have problems with self-esteem? You know the comic. I love quoting this. It was once a comic strip. So there was a guy sitting in the psychiatrist's chair, and the psychiatrist says to him, Irwin, it's not a complex. You really are inferior. It's not a. You know, people have an inferiority complex. It's not a complex. You're inferior. Complex. So I think that's hilarious. So why do you have a problem with self-esteem? No, because I know that I'm important. So why don't I feel that way? Why do I feel unimportant? Why do I feel that I'm not talented? Why do I feel that I'm not successful? Why do I feel that I'm not good? But you know that you are, because you have cover. Everybody has this basic amount of cover. Cats don't go to psychologists. Cats don't have this problem. They don't think, oh, it's beneath my dignity to live in a robot garbage room. They don't think that way. They just know that Shabbos afternoon comes, and it's like it's a party. I'm saying they go in, they have all the leftover chulent and the meat bones and all the delicious stuff. They don't care. Because they're cat. They don't have kavod. A dog doesn't have kavod. Any animal doesn't have kavod. Every human being that's alive not only has kavod, but that's the basic building blocks of who that person is. Because we know that primarily we're neshama, and that neshama is called a kavod. If you don't have kavod, you're just not. And the less kavod you have, the less happy you're going to be in life. Person has, now we're going to define in a few minutes what real kavod is. But in the meantime, we have to realize the importance, how critical it is for a person to have respect, to the extent that it's even more important for the person than pleasure. And we know how important pleasure is, but kavod will always trump pleasure. And a lot of times people will go through a lot of suffering, physically, just so that they're not embarrassed. That's covered. Now, so that means that to the extent that you build up your covered, your self-respect, you're more of a person. You're a happier person. How to say it in English? You're strengthened. You're built as a human being. In Hebrew, they call it lahatsim. You go up. The more covered you have, the less covered you have. The less happy you are, and by the way, it doesn't matter how much money you have or how much kavod other people are giving you. The answer is how you feel basically about yourself. So, Chazal say, Ezehu mechubad. Who's somebody that has kavod? Who's somebody that has kavod? So people think you have kavod because they put your name in the newspaper, because people think you're so great. What's the answer? Hamechabed es habrios. If you honor others. Why? So I wanted to look before to make sure that it was the Maharal who says it. But I think, if my memory serves me correctly, the Maharal says, because kavod is something that you either have or you don't have. If you have it inside of you, you're filled with kavod. Kavod means you realize your own dignity and you realize the basic dignity of people. Why do you have dignity? Because you realize that human beings are filled with kavod. Human beings are filled with dignity. So therefore, you own that kavod. So now what do you do with that kavod? You're mechabed other people. Why is kavod not ezehu mechubad? Who is mechubad? The guy who gets his name in the New York Times and everybody says he's so great. Why is that not somebody with kavod? Does he have kavod? No. What does he have? Nothing. Other people are talking about him. What do we care about other people? We don't care about other people at all. It's just, what does it matter what he thinks about? It's so completely irrelevant. You know what I always think about when I, on those rare occasions when I try, when I'm concerned for a moment about what people are thinking? I always imagine that I'm really hungry and somebody else is eating breakfast. And I'm watching this person eat breakfast. What does that do for me? Am I any less hungry afterwards? No. At worst, I'm more hungry. At best, I'm just the same hungry. But him eating is not going to help me. Anything that happens with anybody else, within anybody else, is 1,000,000% completely irrelevant when it comes to you. Because that's that other person. Just like when he eats, it's not going to fill your stomach. So too, when he tells you that you're important or unimportant, that doesn't make you important or unimportant. It doesn't mean anything. Because that's his own perspective. His perspective, memanavshach. Manavshach means either this way or that way, but either way it doesn't help you. If he's correct in his assessment of you, then what do you need him for? It's true. And let's say he's not correct in his assessment of you, then who cares what he says? It's not true. But some people don't live their lives that way. They're empty, and they spend, I would say many people, I would say the vast majority of people, they're very empty inside, and they're always looking for validation from other people. They're not mechubadim. They don't feel filled with honor. I once heard, when he once said a good idea, maybe it was my own, I don't know, but I probably heard from somebody else. You have two people, you have Reuven and Shimon. Right? Reuven doesn't believe in Reuven, so he needs Shimon's validation. Shimon, at the same time, is looking for Reuven's validation. So what comes out? It comes out that Shimon himself doesn't believe in Shimon. He needs Reuven's validation, and yet Reuven's still going to Shimon for validation. Whereas Shimon himself can't be self-validating. So why are you, Reuven, dependent upon him? So true honor has it's irrelevant what anybody else thinks. Honor is, I have a soul, I have a kavod. God created me, and that makes me filled with holiness. What does it say in Rashi in this week's parasha? That the Jews are compared to the stars. What does the Baal Shem Tov say about a star? From a distance, how big is a star? Pitsy, pitsy star. They're so small. How big are they really? Huge! They're bigger than the planet Earth! They're so huge! He says the same thing about a Jew. From a distance, what does he look like? He looks like just another person. Just another person. But when you get close, when you see a person's neshama, it's the whole universe was created for this one person. Now, if there'd be nobody left on the planet, it would have been worth it for God to create the entire universe just for this one person. I still do sometimes listen to shiurim from Moshe Shapiro, and he talks a lot about this idea. He showed me this Balaam Or about kavod adam, respect for a person. He says there's not one concept in today's world, in modern society, that is so abused like kavod adam. There's no kavod. Everybody is, the whole idea of Facebook, there's no self-respect. Everybody has to look at you, and you have to look at other people, and they're sending pictures, and he's reading about him. Where's your inside? When we talk about respect, respect is the kavod, not my face, not the face of my different friends. It's a really deep friendship, you know what I mean? Something you never have anything to do with. He's just on the screen, he's your friend. It has nothing to do with, how do you say in Hebrew the word face? You say panim. How do you say inside of a person? Panimiyut. So the panim shows a panimiyut. Everybody has panimiyut. And that's expressed by your panim. But just like you have a different panim than everybody, you also have a different inside. But people don't respect that. People are always, you're looking at what other people are doing, people are talking about other people, and everything is just flouted. You know, I'm doing this, and he says that, and then they have discussions about people's desires for the same gender, for different genders. Everything is discussed and talked about, and there's no kavod adam. There's things that are part of a penis of a person that just aren't supposed to be shown to the whole world. And that's kavod. Kavod is you realize that, and you respect that. And we don't have that in today's world. We don't have that you treat every person. There's a story of a Rebbe. I don't remember which one it was, but it really doesn't matter for our purposes. Story goes that one time, he heard a big gadol was coming, and he ran out to greet him. And then he brings him back into the house, and he sits him at the head of the table, and everybody sees it's the regular guy. It's a regular guy. And he's treating him like the king of the world, like Rabbi David Abuchatzera just walked in, like with a Yashiv, like Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky. Wow, he's giving him food. What can I do for you? He's serving hand and foot. So everyone says, well, why would you make such a big deal out of this guy for? He's just a regular guy. He says, the truth is that when he walked in, before I saw him, I thought it was a gadol hador. And then I realized, shouldn't everybody be treated that way? Of course, the gadol hador has to be extra, extra special. But shouldn't everybody be treated with so much dignity and so much respect? The answer is yes. Normally I don't do it. This time I made a mistake, so I'm just going along with it. So that's what's abused in today's world, is that you have to treat every person. You are the most special person. You are the holiest. You are the most unique representation of God that there is on planet Earth. And everybody is. Everybody is in their own way. Everybody has their own spark. And the Sfas Emes, if you look in this week's Parashat Shmos, he talks about this a lot. This idea of Kochavim, and every Jew being special, and every Jew having a name. What's the idea of a name? A name is that everybody's different. Everybody has a different... And that has to be respected. I'm not you, so it doesn't mean I look down on you. It means that you have things that I don't have, and I have things that you don't have. You look at the Igaris HaRamban. You meet any person. Any person you meet is better than you in some way. There's no such thing as a person who doesn't have positive qualities that you don't have. Who doesn't possess positive qualities that you don't. In other words, everybody has positive qualities that you don't have. Yes? So you look at a person, you say, wow, I know you're better than me in some way. And you respect them, and you don't think any less of yourself. Because you realize that I'm a star. There's nobody in the world who's ever been like me. Ever in history. And even if they would try, they wouldn't be able to be like me. So I feel so good about myself. And since I feel so good about myself, that's the way I view the world. So Ezim Mechubit, I go around being Mechubit everybody else. Because I view myself as being special and unique. And I'm not like that because I am in love with myself. I'm like that because it's true. It's the objective truth. That every person really is so special, and every person is deserving of kavod. And the moment you strip somebody of their kavod, what are you stripping them of? Of their humanity. You're stripping the person of their soul. The moment a person, that's why, what does Chazal say? Show me another religion that says this. Hamalbim es panei chaveru barabim, avo pi sheyesh biyado toru maisin tovim, ein lo chelek leolam haba. You don't have a chelek in olam haba. You embarrass your friend, you can have all the mitzvahs you want, you don't have a chelek in olam haba. Why? Because you killed the essential person. You took away the person's kavod. Now sometimes I speak to guys. I don't understand. Because I get calls about shidduchs. Sometimes they ask about a boy. There was a boy who studied in yeshiva. What do you think about him? So the truth is, I always give a positive report. Because the guy is always so nice to me. So nice. And they're respectful, and people even stand up, and I ask them not to stand up. And some people speak to me in the third person, I beg them not to. And the firmer boy's rebbing me all the time, rebbing this, rebbing that. And everybody's so respectful. I think isn't it nice, so I'm not really any Talmud Chacham. I'm really not special in my own way, but definitely not deserving of special honor that wouldn't be given to anybody else, any other human being. But Behozel, they give it to me. The Seder, and then they call me up, and I have nice things to say. But I'm beginning to doubt myself. Because when I talk to guys, they start telling me what goes on in the dorm, and what goes on, on Tehillim, and what goes on in the basement room sometimes, and in the dining room. I don't even know what it's called, call-outs or something? Like people, they say things. And they hurt other people's feelings. They stick their nose into other people's businesses. I can't believe it. So I heard a few stories like that from a bunch of different guys about how much... disrespect there is. And not amongst Shana Aleph, by the way. Shana Aleph guys don't generally, unfortunately, they don't talk to me. Is it my hat or my gartel that turns them off? Or what I say? Or is this everything together? What am I getting? I don't bite. You know what I mean? Physically, I'm not at all, intimidating. But I don't know. I guess it's something about me that just turns people off. So, but the Shana Aleph guys, Baruch Hashem, some of them talk to me. And I wish more Shana Aleph guys would talk to me. Well, I wish people would talk to me. But I'm talking about the Shana Aleph guys. And they tell me how much disrespect there is. And I will not mean. I'm a kofar. I don't believe it. So the other day I had a dream. And one of the guys, he's in this room right now, okay? All of a sudden I'm talking to him and he starts cursing me out. In my dream. And I couldn't believe it. He's always so nice to me. And then I woke up and I said, oh, I get it. They could put on a show that they're being nice to me. But really, when you really get to know them, it's all just a show. And they'll curse you. They'll curse at you. And I heard, sometimes the guys who I think are the nicest guys, I don't know what to say anymore. So the other day, they kept calling me. They told me about this boy. I happen to love this boy. He's the sweetest boy. So he started asking me questions. Is he controlling? Does he have an anger problem? I said, I shouldn't have said it probably, but I kept saying, I've never seen anything like that. I've known him for years. But all I can tell you is, I don't know anymore about anybody. I can't guarantee you 1,000%. There are only... say, 9 people and 10 people in the world I really know. Okay, my immediate family from growing up and my immediate family from now. My wife and my children. Basically, that's Ken Yerbu. That's the amount of people I know. Anybody else? I don't know. I don't know. It could all be a show. Because people tell me the very same guys who are so nice to me, And you know, you see them shuckling during Shemoneh Esrei, and they tell me that when they're dealing with each other, people will say something to somebody else that shows a lack of kavod. I don't understand. In the works of the Gentiles, they talk, when you're dealing with marriage and relationships, they talk a lot about borders, about gvulot, borders. Do you think Rav Eisenstein would give me permission to use his Rambam? Because I see this is Rav Eisenstein's Rambam. But I assume he will. And if not, I guess I'll either go to Gehenna or I'll go to the dentist, and then somebody brought me Rav Eisenstein's Rambam. Now, Rav Eisenstein would definitely say yes, there's no question. So I have a Rambam opened up here. I think it's the most, this is your site today, this past day. Very important Rambam. But before we get to the Rambam, so they talk about borders. So there are three types of borders in relationships. One type of border is that it's called a gvul parutz. The border is broken through. It means there is no border, which means people are in other people's business. Example, let's say, I have a girlfriend. Let's say, I did, then I convinced her to marry me. Let's say, it wasn't easy to get her to go out with me, to marry me, in the end, let's say, girls, when I was growing up, treated me like Shana Aleph guys treat me today, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't spit at me, but they didn't want to, you know, be my friend. So, I have a girlfriend, right? Okay? And then, somebody says to me, so, where are you going tonight? My roommate, where are you going tonight? What are you doing? You're planning to get engaged? Where are you going? And he starts asking too many questions. What's that called? That's called breaking. We have a friendship. You're my roommate. But I think you're going a little bit too far over here. You're going too far. You know, and I go out, and, let's say I buy her a present, and let's say I go out and I buy her a bracelet. Let's just say. So I go out and I buy her, and he says, What'd you get? So I say, nothing. No, what'd you get? The bracelet. No, that's a stupid gift. Stupid gift. You should really... It's a border here. It's none of your business. It's really none of your business. And it's also not the way you say it. But there are a million examples of people, b'chalal, in dormitories. You're living amongst each other. Sometimes you forget you're wearing his socks, he's wearing your socks, and you just break through the border. That you say things that it's not your place to say. You make comments it's not your place to make. You look at things you're not supposed to, some things you're not even supposed to look at. You're not supposed to look sometimes when, let's say, it's a public forum and somebody's being embarrassed. You're not even supposed to look. I see people laughing. I see people looking at the embarrassed guy. When you're that embarrassed guy, you don't want everyone to look at you. So the border means you don't look. You let that border. But people break through the borders and they have to stick their nose. And that's the modern world. There's no borders anymore. You have to know everything about everybody. Recently, there was a gerus of a famous person. I won't say who. And the gerus was conducted by a famous rabbi. I also won't say who. And a friend of mine, who I also won't say who, was with this rabbi for Shabbos. And he says, they fooled me. Because on her Twitter page, it says that she was b'chal Shabbos. She was out with her friends on Shabbos somewhere. So in other words, today, you can't be a fake ger and be b'chal Shabbos without the whole world knowing about it. Okay, so that, I'm not... Obviously, it really was a fake Eris, and it's very unfortunate. But the idea is that's the world. Everybody knows what's happening with everybody. And that's crazy. And people think they have a right to know. And people look into other people. Today, you can look online. You can get people tell me how much money a guy makes. How much taxes he pays. How much charity he gives. You're breaking through somebody else's border. You have no right to look. So that's one prime relationship where the borders are broken through. There's another type of relationship where the borders are too firm. You're not getting close to each other. That's not good either. If you apply it to marriage. Sometimes in marriage, you have a wife, and you want to be close with your wife, so you want to be one. And the Sheva Brachos, they said, you are married, you know what they say, when you're single, you're a half, and then when you get married, you're finished. Right? That's the joke. So he said, oh, we're one complete unit. We're a whole now. So that means that I'm you and you're me. So that means that I can now stick my nose into all your business. It's a very big mistake, and it causes a lot of problems. This closeness, when it's too close, is very, very dangerous. Why? Because frankly, she doesn't want your nose in all of her business. You have to know, when you have a relationship, this applies in the dormitory, and this will apply with your wife, and this is one of the most important parts of marriage, what her borders are, how close she wants you to be to her, how much she wants to know about what's going on in your life. You know, sometimes somebody's walking, I know myself, like, you know, you're walking with packages, and somebody starts looking, what's in there? Maybe I don't want to show you. Yeah, I don't want to show you. This is the thing. Where are you going? Somebody's walking through Sharif, and somebody says to me, where are you going? I'm going to my psychiatrist to get more pills. What's in your business? What's in your business? So you have to know. That was used as an example. But sometimes you people are embarrassed when you ask them questions. They don't want everybody to know. So you have to know in life, where is that border? When you're married, where does she want me? And where does she not want me? And that applies emotionally. Emotionally, sometimes she's going to want you closer. And emotionally, sometimes she's going to want space. It applies, obviously, physically. Sometimes she wants closer. And sometimes she wants space. It applies spiritually. Maybe it's none of your business. Maybe, in your opinion, her skirt is a little shorter than you'd like it to be. But maybe she doesn't want you involved in that part of your life. And you know what? Not only is it breaking through the border, but it's not going to help either. All it does is create friction. That's all it does. If she wants, then obviously you say something. But in a lot of relationships, people step, and I learned this from my Rebbe. My Rebbe's been dealing with couples now for over 30 years. And he has a lot of experiences, a lot of experience. And he told me something very important in marriage. If it's your issue, then it's none of her business. If it's her issue, then it's none of your business. What she does with her time is really generally none of your business. Why should you care? A lot of husbands, they want to control where she is and what she's doing and how she's spending her money. Not your business. And the woman also has to know, and a lot of women don't know this, unfortunately, that it's not her business what her husband does. You know, why aren't you doing this? Why don't you go to the minyan? Why don't you do... You have to set the borders. Now, there's some husbands who want it. They want to be encouraged to go learn. They want to be encouraged to go to minyan. That's wonderful. But if you're breaking through the border that the person doesn't want it, so A, not only does it destroy the relationship, but it also doesn't help. Because then it just gets a person angry and it creates friction. And the moment you break through that border, what does the person do in reaction? Then they break through your border and then they start looking at things you're doing. And it's really not for you to look. It's not for you to see. And it's none of your business. So if you keep that border, if you keep that boundary, then you're doing fine. Now, what some people do is they keep a very strong boundary. What does that mean? It means you don't come near me, I'm not going to come near you. There are relationships like that also. And it's very, very unhealthy. Then you can't have a relationship if there's no closeness. So with every person in the world, what you're trying to find is the medium. You don't want to have no borders, that everybody's always involved in the other one's business. You don't want to have too many borders, because then you're too separate. But you want to have comfortable enough that you're close, but that you let the other person have their space. You know, your wife says to you, she's going on a diet. She's going on a diet. In order to celebrate her diet, being dieting now for 12 hours, she goes and she eats half a tub of Breyer's ice cream. So you're debating, should I tell her it's not Chol of Yisrael, or should I tell her it's going to make her fat, or should I just say both? Right? So that's breaking through the borders. She knows that she wants to diet, and she doesn't need your comments. And that's the problem today, all these... I'm sorry, I would say I'm giving up, but Rabbi Nachman says, "En yush ba'olam klal." You're not allowed to give up. But I see the way people speak to each other. I'm saying just even getting on a bus, it's not respectful. It's not respectful when somebody's sitting in a seat, a big fat guy, and nobody can get by. So sit next to the window. Why do you make people stand there or have to ask you to move? Why don't you just make it more comfortable for people? And if you want the what's it called? If you want the aisle seat, then offer it to somebody. Say, can I get up so you can go in? But some people don't do that. Some people do even worse. They take their bag and they put it on the seat next to them. And therefore, now they have two seats. They have their own seat. Recently, I saw a kid on the bus. I said to him, what are you doing? The bus was filled with people. And his bag. I said, what are you doing? He says, mach patlacha. So I made sure it was a frum kid. It was a frum kid, so he understands. I said, I don't think it's honest. You only paid for one seat. And you're taking up two seats, and there are people on the bus. It's none of your business. That's what he said. But where's this? You're giving more respect to your bag. Your bag needs a seat more than this person. Or here's one of my favorite examples. You call somebody up on the telephone, and what do they say on the message? Please leave a message. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. I'm going to tell you my own experience in life. As soon as I can starts in 2 weeks and ends at never. Yes? Usually never. Usually. What type? I'm not talking about big rabbanim. I'm calling. I'm not saying I'm calling Rav Chaim Kanievsky. I have a question. I expect him to get right back to me. I'm saying you're calling a regular person, not the President of the United States, just a regular person. They say that you call them and they don't get back to you. You know when they get back to you, by the way? They get back to you when they think they need you. Why do they get back to you? Because they think that you want them. So if you want them, what does that have to do with that? But if they need you, then they'll get, if you have a job to offer them, you're a baseball player, and they're going to offer you a typical six-year, $72.5 million contract. Yes, to strike out with the bases loaded in the ninth inning, you're getting paid anyway. Okay, that's the great thing about baseball. Then you'll call them right back. But it's just, it's a lack, I went from borders to respect. But it doesn't matter, because they're really all the same. Breaking through the borders is a lack of respect. Having too many borders, a lack of respect, and not returning phone calls, that's it. You're stepping back and you're ignoring the relationship. That is not respect. And people do it all the time. Or you ask somebody, people send emails. Oh, it's a quick, takes a second. I remember I once applied for a job somewhere. So, you know, I would like to sit and just learn all day, but my kids like to eat. So, I sent out my resume to a bunch of places, and nobody answered. It wasn't that they said no. One place, I think, was nice enough to say no. Everybody else just ignored me. I was thinking, what's going on? What's going on? You can't say sorry. You can't have like a form thing that takes exactly a second. And by the way, I wasn't, you know, applying to a major company, you know, with 25,000 applicants. You know, something small, you know, a little bit on the side, you know. And then I called somebody. It takes literally the whole thing should take 5 seconds. 5 seconds to show the person enough respect to answer. And they don't have respect. They just ignore you as if you don't exist. I don't understand. I'm talking about firm people. I don't understand. So you see it all the time, just the way people relate to each other, or the way people don't relate to each other. It's just a lack of respect. When you wake up in the morning, the job is, today, I have to give people, every person I meet, I have to think of a way to respect this person. How can I show this person more respect? People don't. People make snide remarks, and people laugh at other people, and people put other people down. By the way, if you want to give tochacha, it's a minok shanabet, mikadmes dinan, an old minok of shanabet. But all of a sudden, this yeshiva officially doesn't have a mashgiach, right? Some yeshivas have a mashgiach, whose job is to give mussar, and this yeshiva doesn't have one. So therefore, a lot of times, shanabet, guys, they say, if there's no one's going to do the job, I'm going to do the job. So they walk around, checking other guys. Why do you wear tchelas? Why do you wear tchelas? Your rabbi say, you know, the gedolim say not to wear tchelas. What are you davening such a long Shemoneh Esrei for? They're looking at other people davening Shemoneh Esrei. They're looking at how many times a person raises his hand in class. They're counting. They say, oh, that's interesting that you spoke to. Normally, you haven't spoken so much recently. What? And they start saying, no, what you're doing here is right. What you're doing here is wrong. You should be doing this for the summer. You should be doing. People aren't going to listen to you anyway. People don't want to hear it. So again, every person I'm looking at in this room, I'm saying, you can't be that person. It can't be. So therefore, it's really nobody here. It's somebody out there. But I'm saying, well, it's a lack of respect. It's a lack of respect. Now, let's say you really, really, really want to say something. If you really, really want to say something, this is the yisod of giving somebody mussar. The yisod is, first you have to make sure that this person feels like $1 million. This person is in love with himself, and he realized that he's filled with kavod, and he's created with Tzelem Elokim. That's A. B, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the person has to know for a fact that you love him. That's why when Yaakov saw the shepherds and he was about to give them mussar, that they weren't being honest, they were bringing their sheep early, what name did he call them? Achai. My brothers. Why did he say my brothers? I'm about to give mussar. First I want to show this person, I really love you. I'm not God's policeman. I'm not concerned with myself. I really, really care about you. And then after you get that this person feels like $1 million about himself, which by the way, almost never happens. And B, you really, really, genuinely love this person. It has nothing to do with you. Then you can say mussar. Then you go up to the person, you put your arm around him, and you say, you know, I noticed recently you've had a little bit of yirid and you're learning, you're not doing so well, and you're not happy. You know, what can I do to make you feel better? But that's not what happens. You know, recently I was in a shul where I daven in a shul sometimes. There are a lot of sleepers. Either they're sleeping or they're saying tachnun. But on Shabbos you don't say tachnun. So I'm assuming that they're really sleeping. One of the two, okay? Or maybe as they're sleeping, they're saying tachnun. I don't know, but their head is down. So one time I wanted to get up and just say, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a dormitory. It's Shabbos meal ends at 7:00. If you're going to come, have a little respect. This is why you're not allowed to sleep in a base medrash, unless you're always learning the base medrash, but that's not the case here. Have a little bit of respect. You don't sleep during davening. Davening starts at 8:00 in the morning. You finish your meal at 7:00 at night. Make sure if you need 8 hours to sleep, go to sleep at 11. But one time I saw there were like 6, 7, there's a minion of 15 people, let's say, and 6, 7 guys were sleeping in the middle of davening. Well, what's going on? So what's really going on is that they're just bored out of their brains, and sleeping is a lot more interesting than davening. They already know what's going to happen. You know, they're gonna say Shemoneh Esrei, they're gonna say Kedusha, they're gonna say Hodo Aleretz Shamayim, they're gonna put the Torah back. It's all like very predictable. Then they're gonna finish off with Ein Kelokeinu. But I wanted to say, and I didn't say. Why didn't I say? I was sure I was right. The only thing is, I was so angry at them. I didn't love them. I was angry at them that they were messing up my tefillah. I'm in a shul, and I want this to be a good shul, and they're messing up my tefillah because they're sleeping. So therefore, if that's my feeling, then you're not allowed to give rebuke. What do I have to give them? I have to give them respect. Why respect? Because it's still, at the end of the day, I personally don't sleep during davening. I've never been so humble, so I need perfect conditions to sleep. I don't fall asleep so easily. Yes, but I don't sleep during davening. Just once. One time in my life, I took a few minutes. Once. I was jet lagged, and I hadn't slept the previous night almost. So gotcha. Forgive me. By the way, I didn't do it in the shul either. I went out to the back. I took, it was like 15 minutes, but I think it was the most quality 15 minutes I've ever had. It says, Mayim Genuvim Yom Taku, like when you have sweet waters, it's most tasty. So you know, that halftime Kriya Satorah Shluf I got was, also I knew what was going to happen, I've been through the parasha so many times. So, it's great, I put my talus over my head, I went to the back, nobody can see me. Anyway, so just the Gabbai asked me to lower my snores. So, you give, in many ways, they're still better than I am. This person's a better person than I am. Elamai, I happen to be better than him in that I don't sleep during davening. And he's better than me in 1,000 other ways. So the person still deserves respect. So here what I really wanted to do was to get to the Rambam. This is a Rambam. And the 15th parak of Hilchas Ishus, you should write it down. You should make it into, go to one of the shops in Mea Shearim, make it into a beautiful sign. If you're cheap, go to the woodwork place. You can get it for 50 shek. If you want to spend more money, they have this fancy gold place where they make these gorgeous gold signs in Mea Shearim. Beautiful. That's where I always get my gifts. They have these, you know what I'm talking about? Behind the glass, they cut like paper things out of gold. Beautiful. Okay. Says the Rambam, V'chein tzivu chachamim sheyehei adam mechabed et ishto yoter migufo. You give her kavod more than you give yourself kavod. So everybody's worried about their own self-respect. You walk around all day thinking to yourself when you're married, how can I give my wife even more respect than I give myself? So the Rambam says, Sivu Chachamim. You have a person who doesn't respect his wife, doesn't matter how big his yam is, or how big his beard, or how many Yiddish words he knows how to throw in. He's over on B'chein Sivu Chachamim. And he's over on not giving a person kavod, which as we discussed is one of the most basic Jewish sins there is, because by stripping somebody of their humanity, obviously, there's just about nothing worse. Ve'ohava kigufo. And you have to love your wife as much as yourself. So to love your wife more than yourself, lo pashut. To love your wife, to honor your wife more than yourself, that you can do. Because you show acts of honor. You show her how special she is. And by the way, everybody's special. Everybody, anybody I've ever gotten to know, that's why I love to get to know people. Because the more you get to know somebody, the more you find out in what ways they're special. Now, it also happens to be the more you find out their faults. But that's not your job. You don't see their faults. There's a story in the Gemara about a rabbi whose wife, a tzaddik, whose wife didn't have a hand. And he never noticed. He never noticed. So the Gemara says, wow, what tzaddikah, she was such a tznua, he never noticed that she was missing a hand. And the Gemara says, no. What a tzaddik that he never looked. He only wanted to see good. So there's a type of tznius where you cover up what other people wouldn't want to see. You know, when you blow your nose, you don't like open up the tissue and show your friends. And then there's a type of tznius where you don't look. Because it's not for you to see. People don't want you to see. So you don't look. So you have to be mechabed, you try to show, we talked about before, the borders. Give her space, exactly what she needs, and in all the other ways you can. Giving her, smiling when she comes into the room, giving her respect, calling, you know, showing her affection. All these things are ways of showing her respect, that she's important. What does the word kavod come from? Kaved, heavy. Yes. Not talking about the physical weight, but spiritually. That this person carries spiritual weight. This person is a daughter of Hashem. This person is like no other person in history. And she deserves a tremendous... I don't know almost any couple like that. I want to tell you, I once read a book. It's one of the best books I ever read on marriage. And I've read Baruch Hashem a lot. It was put out by a guy, his name is Rav Yaakov Friedman. It tells a story. It's in Hebrew, but if you know Hebrew, it's worth the reading. It's about 500-600 pages. But I have a deal with the guys in Moriah that I read and they leave me alone. So usually very often I buy the books. They know I'm a big buyer, but to buy every book was hard. So this book, I remember I was sitting and reading in Moriah one day, and he told the story there. There was once a couple. The couple was maybe in their early 70s. And he walks into the house, and he's talking to the Rav over there, and then the wife comes in, and he runs to the kitchen, and he prepares for a cup of tea, and he brings her a cup of tea. Oh, here, darling, can I give you something else? And he was like so excited, like he's involved with this, like Shalom Bayis and how to treat a wife. And he said, wow, a couple in their 70s, and look at how much respect he's giving her. Brings her tea. What else can I get? So nice, so respectful. Like a guest, like you would treat a guest. A guest walks into your house. Of course you want to get them. So he comes home and he tells his mother. He says, you know, I was at so-and-so's house today, and I saw the amount of respect he gave his wife. Wow! After all those years. And his mother said, No. They just got married last month. It's their second time around. He said it was the worst day of his life. It was the worst day of his... Finally he found a couple that after so many years still gives each other respect. And it wasn't so many years. It was the fake first month. Doesn't mean anything. Can you imagine what a marriage would be like if that was all the years of marriage? Every time the wife walks into the room, the husband runs to serve her. And every time the husband runs into the room, it's a Gan Eden. You need both, by the way. You need him. He's into it. She's into it. So fortunately, this Shiurim are recorded. Sometimes girls listen. So if she's into it and he's into it, I promise you, you have a guaranteed Gan Eden. It says in the Gemara, you should be mechabed your wife in order that you get rich. Ki hechid tisasru. You should be ashirim. So it's also a good school for parnassus. You get everything you want. You get a loving marriage. You get some parnassa. You have healthy children. Nothing harms the children more than parents who don't get along. There's nothing you can do to a kid directly that will affect the kid as much as an unhealthy relationship between the parents. Okay? And then a lot of times they compensate. That's a whole different story that we're not going to get into. So you show her the proper respect. And she shows you, and then you're living. I promise you, people don't do it. I don't know why people don't want to listen, but people don't want to listen. You already got it. That's not the way you treated her when you were going out. You're going out, you were a lot nicer to her, and what can I do for you? And everything was all lovey-dovey. But then after you get married, people start making demands, and you want, and she wants, and she doesn't do it for me, why should I do it for her? And you also see all of her faults, and then you don't have as much respect for her, and also you got her in the bag, so what do you need it for? What are you going to get now? So you got her a cup of tea. Now what? Wouldn't it be more comfortable to just sit in your chair and continue reading your newspaper? So you got her a cup of... What, she can't make her own cup of tea? I haven't met a woman yet who can't make her own cup. I've met a woman who aren't so good in the kitchen, yeah? But a cup of tea, everybody knows. So make your own cup of tea. Cut yourself a piece of... No. She walks into the house. The husband runs to the fridge. He gets her a piece of cake and he gets her a spoon. And he puts her on the fancy china. You don't serve. I learned this from an English couple once who came to my house. I served them on paper goods. And then afterwards I was told that was a very big error. You don't serve people, guests, in England. That I was told, Manu, I don't know if it's true. On paper, that's not the way you serve a king. That is full. You have to give cover. So you serve her, you take out the best china, and you bring her. And not only will she love you and think you're the best guy in the entire, but she's going to want to do it for you 1,000 times. 1,000 times over. So even if you're l'shul lo l'shma, it doesn't matter. Because that's what she's going to want to do for you. If you just mechabda yosir mikufa, I don't know why people don't do it. I don't see husbands respecting wives so much. I don't see wives respecting husbands. And all this we talked about in a previous year, all this criticism. You've no right to give criticism unless A, the person really, really feels wonderful about himself or herself. Unless your wife is 100% secure in who she is and loves herself, then you're not allowed to criticize her. And B, she has to know that you're doing it completely out of love. And C, very important. See, and you also have to know how to do it. If you meet all three criteria, when do you meet all three? Never. See, don't even start. Because either 99% of the time she doesn't feel so 100% about herself. And B, you aren't doing it out of love. You're doing it because you're annoyed. It can even be a religious thing. You're religiously annoyed at her. And C, you don't know how to do it. People don't know how to do it. So what's the point? It's against halach and it's against the Rambam. And then all the kagufa. The more money you have to spend on her. You have money, who are you spending money on? You have money, you can give it to tzedakah, you can give it to your wife. You go up to a rabbi, I promise you, in many cases will say, don't go give it to tzedakah. You get a letter in the mail, Nebuch, what a terrible story. They have 27 children. 13 of them are sick with this. 5 of them are getting married. 4 of them need special lit. Oy vey. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to take my wife out to dinner? And that's what I'm going to spend my money on? The answer is yeah. The answer is yeah. It's the beginning of Shalom Bayis, and then afterwards you're nice to the rest. And there are a lot of people like that, by the way. They're in love with the rest of the world, and when they're in their own family, they treat like garbage. V'lo yatir le'eima yisera. Some husbands, they instill fear in their wives. I don't even understand. I told you. There's a statistic that in Israel, that over 100... The truth is, I heard 200,000. I can't even believe it. 200,000 women are beaten. 200... I can't even believe that 200 women are beaten. 200. I'm not talking about chiloni. I'm not talking about goyim. I have deal. I'm talking about religious people. Not 200,000. Religious women are beaten. But there are a lot. There are a good number of religious men who strike their wives. So I don't even believe it's true, meaning I know it's true, but I can't deal with it emotionally. I can't. So I'm not even going to talk about it. But verbally, you say something to hurt a girl's feelings. So it's a lot worse. It's a lot worse. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names will kill me. You can kill her. People, I see the way they talk to them. Don't you realize how fragile she is? How much you're hurting her feelings? Don't you realize if we have more shiur, if the guys want, we'll learn from the Chazon Ish what he says, the way to treat a wife, and how you can literally, spirit, emotionally kill a woman. And that's what husbands do. So the Rambam says here, don't make her afraid of you. V'yiyeh diburo ima benachas. You always have to speak pleasantly and sweetly and lovingly. You know the old story, they once had a 70th birthday party for this guy that his wife made. So he started saying about her, and I would like to thank my beloved, dear, darling, special wife for the party that she made me. She made it on my behalf. So afterwards, and he said, that's so nice. After so many years of marriage, you still call her by all those affectionate names. He says, well, the truth is I couldn't remember her name. I was just saying all the other names. So you have to speak sweetly and nicely. And also, by the way, it goes the same thing in the dorm. You also have to speak benachas with people. There's no room to scream at people. And there's no room to hurt people. So, I've said it about 12 times tonight, but I'm having a serious emotional problem dealing with the fact that good guys in yeshiva say things that are hurtful to other human beings. So first of all, it's an Isser Doraisa. It says in the Torah that Lo Son Rishisachi, and the Gemara says Zonas Dvarim. You say one word that causes another person pain, so you might as well chaval. You're going to get a lot more pleasure eating pork, and it's less of an aveira. It's less of an aveira to eat pork than it is to hurt somebody's feelings. So you might as well enjoy it. Go to McDonald's. Go to McDonald's and say, yo, Dwight, give me one of those cheeseburgers. So you say, aren't you one of them Jews? And you say, well, Dwight, I was about to hurt my friend's feelings, but I decided if I'm going to rebel against God, I might as well enjoy your 99-cent cheeseburger. And put on that some of the oily fries. It's eating like kosher. You're hurting another person's feelings. Velo yelo etze velo ragzen. And you're not allowed to be like depressive and upset and sad. And you're not allowed to get, imagine, you're not allowed to get angry at your wife. You're not allowed to. It just hurts her feelings. And there's nothing positive. And then it says the other side of the coin, a woman has to treat her husband, doesn't matter who he is, doesn't matter what he does, she has to treat him, it's interesting, when the Rambam is talking about the husband, he said he has to be mechabed his wife more than he's mechabed migufo, himself, and here about a wife, he says, he should be mechabed herself, when it talks about a wife treating a husband, she should be mechabed her husband, yosir midai. So you see, in both Rambams, the Rambam says different things about men and women, but the common denominator is, cover. You have to treat your wife with a tremendous amount of cover, and she has to treat you with a tremendous amount of cover. Anything, if my husband wants it, then I want it. That's the way it is. I once read a story about a woman. She was living, her husband was a tzaddik, and he didn't want to have anything modern in the house. They were living on dirt floors. You know, they were living like 500 years ago. Okay? And then somebody once asked her, said, like, doesn't it bother you? Like, don't you want to live, you know, in a normal house with a floor, you know. I said, no. I said, why not? I said, because that's what my husband wants. And therefore, that's what I want. And after he died, she went and she moved into a normal apartment. Because that's what her husband wants, and that's what she... It's not even a question. If that's what your spouse wants, then that's what you want. Again, marriages don't work like the Rambam says. But since we're here, and we haven't started our marriage yet, so the marriage is shut. Everything a woman does, call myself Pete. Is this going to make my husband happy, or is it make my husband unhappy? And she lives, and she's not a shifcha, and she's not a slave, but she's just, it's chesed. She is here to make him happy, and therefore, if she knows that he wants her to do something, she does it. And if she knows that it'll bother him, so then she tries as best she can not to do it. And he should be in her eyes like a master king. In other words, cover it again. Treat your husband like a king. That's what the Rambam wants. They used to say, it's an old joke, now you have to treat your husband like a king. What about treating the wife like a queen? So the answer is that if she treats him like a king, then he'll treat her like a queen. Anything the husband doesn't like, she pushes away. Everything the husband likes, she draws near. She is in this world to make this man happy. And again, it's a two-way street. You have two Rambams, I went over it, that's my apology. And the Rambam is saying, very simply, you're here to make this other person happy. It means a lot of love. It means a tremendous amount of respect. And if you do that, then it's yeshuva, no yeshuva. You're going to be happy. Your kids are going to be happy. And you're going to be able to enjoy your life. But people who try to cut corners and they're not so respectful and they think about themselves and they're selfish. So you only lose from it. You only lose. So I just want to give everybody a bracha. They should really try as much as they can to internalize it. And to work on it, to work on this, just giving kavod, just start with giving kavod to your friends, giving kavod to the bus driver, giving kavod to the ani at the kotel, and if we have to shem in that schus, we will all be zoche, that our yishuv will be noel, mishubach, will be beloved and sweet and praiseworthy. Amen.